Welcome to the Rocky Messages Podcast. Rocky is a gathering of people that want to know Jesus and love like him. If you hear something today that you'd like to know more about, you should check out our other podcast, Rocky Unscripted, where we take a topic and through conversation and study, we go a little bit deeper. And right now, let's join today's message.
Amen. Good to see everybody this morning. And in light of just Sean sharing again, please know I love this church. And super honored to even just be considered to be part of a conversation. So, like Sean said, thank you for your prayers for me, for my spouse, our kids, and for our elders as well. So, hey, if you have your Bibles, John chapter 9 is where we're going to be hanging out today. You can turn there. And if you are new with us this morning, or maybe you've been hanging out with us a little bit here or there, we've jumped into the new year, and we decide as a church that we're going to be working through the book of John as we get closer and closer to Easter, which is not far away, because John was one of the original disciples. I've been calling him the OG disciple. He was there essentially from the beginning of Jesus' ministry, and he saw some things and he heard some things that were very, very important. In fact, when John kind of writes his gospel, which is his story of kind of his interaction with Jesus, he writes it, or he's dictating to somebody who's writing it when he's at a very old age. He's come to the end of his life, and somebody, you know, along the way must have said to him, John, we need to get your story on paper. And there are already some other gospels out there that were being circulated that other guys that are even part of that original crew had written, who are eyewitnesses. You've got a guy named Luke who was very meticulous. He wasn't one of the originals, but he was an investigator, and so he investigated these things and talked to so many people. But John was there. So somewhere along the way, somebody said to John, you got to get this down. And so John, I'm assuming he is feeling kind of the weight and the pressure, because this is a big deal. He has a lot of stories, I'm sure, that are going through his mind. And John actually tells us his thesis statement at the end of his gospel, where he essentially says, hey guys, there's a lot of things I could write about. There's more things I could tell you about, but I really try to pick the most important things. So that, and then here's like the John's kind of, this is why I'm writing this to you. He says, so that you might believe what I believe. And here's why, because he says, by believing in the name of Jesus, you may have life. He says, look, I ran into this guy who claimed to be the Son of God, and that's a wild claim, and I get that's a lot to take in. But then he goes, but I saw some things and I heard some things that I was not able to unsee and unhear. And so I believed and I followed him. And John, if he was here, he'd say to you, he changed my life. And John would go, and I hope that through the stories I've shared with you, that you might believe too, because it is in his name that we have life. So John, he organizes his whole kind of book about Jesus around these miracles. But John doesn't call them miracles, he calls them signs, because he knows there's a trap when it comes to the miracles that Jesus performed. Because if you're not careful, and this is what the crowd was guilty of 2,000 years ago when they were kind of following Jesus around, it was, John goes, look, these miracles are awesome, and Jesus had great compassion on people, and he served people, and he healed people, and if you were here a couple weeks ago, he fed thousands of people. But he goes, look, the miracle is not more important than the man. The miracle isn't a bigger story than the one who is performing the miracle. And if you're not careful, and if I'm not careful, all of a sudden the sign or the miracle becomes the most important thing. And so John says, I'm not going to call it a miracle. I'm going to call these signs, because these miracles are pointing to something, or even more specific, somebody. And he goes, don't get lost in the miracle. It's not about the miracle. It's about what the miracle is pointing to. It's about the one who is performing the miracle. Because this whole thing, John would say, the most important conversation is not about the miraculous. It's about the man who claims to be the Son of God. And if you're not careful, you will get stuck there. either in your introduction of faith or for some of us who've been believers for a while, and I see this all the time. There's, you know, I get with people who have yet to kind of come to a conclusion about who Jesus is, and essentially they say something very similar to what the crowd said that was following Jesus 2,000 years ago. They'll say, well, you know, let's test God. If God is real, then why doesn't he, you know, and they're kind of, they're talking about, I just need another sign. If God could just show me a little bit more, if he could just perform a little miracle, and I've done this plenty of times before. Sometimes I set people up and sometimes they set themselves up, but we'll be at a restaurant, you know, and this person's saying, you know, I just need a sign, or if God would just do this, and somewhere along the way I go, okay, well, here's this cup, right, on the table. And if we just ask God right now to move this cup or to tip this cup over, would you believe in God? You know, and the person's like, yeah. I would believe in God if God would move that cup. And I go, great. So we put a cup on the table and I go, okay, now let's ask God to move this cup. And it's kind of awkward. You know, we're like, God, move the cup. And then I just tip the cup over. And they go, whoa, you can't do that. I go, you never said I couldn't do it. Why can't God use me to encourage you? Here's what I find. We get so caught up in the miraculous sometimes. And because we live in such abundance, sometimes I wonder if there's so many signs around us, we just miss them. We miss them, and then we end up, you know, at a lunch asking God to move a cup. If you weren't here a couple weeks ago, we talked about the miracle where Jesus fed thousands of people, and it's an incredible miracle. If you were there, it would have just wowed you, it wowed the crowd. And yet here's what I know, because of most of us this morning, we live in such abundance. Many of us have never prayed for food. We've only prayed over food. Food is no longer miraculous to us. I mean, we could drive over to the grocery store this morning and none of you are going to be walking into the grocery store and then fall to your knees and start worshiping God. It's normative. This is what we do. But if you go over and you hang out with people in the slums of Kenya who have no food and you would walk them into a grocery store, they might think that place is heaven. Perspective. It's so powerful. And sometimes I wonder, because of the culture in which we live, we miss it. And we keep coming back to God, go, come on, do something more. A couple of years ago when I was on a trip in Kenya, they were asking me questions about food and how that works in America. And I brought up this idea or this thing they never heard before called a drive-thru. And I started talking about Chick-fil-A. And they're like, what's Chick-fil-A? I'm like, it's kind of like heaven, but it's a little bit different. And but I talked about this idea. It was so foreign. They have no context of it. And I say, I drive in my car. And you got to explain about cars. You know, I'm driving my car. And I talk to somebody through this machine. I tell them what they want. And hopefully, in a timely manner, they get it to me. And I eat. And they were like, that is crazy. You know, you don't even cook it. No, I don't cook it. Somebody else cooks it for me. And they're like, that's a miracle. You know, they're just like, dude, if we could experience that, you know, and for me, that's normative. For them, it's miraculous. Wow. What a world you live in. You know, that God, you know, because a very spiritual thing, food, and just, but we don't feel that, do we? Because we have more food than what we need. Or when I was growing up, there was two things that I got picked for growing up. One was that I had really big ears. Anyone in here got big ears? Yeah, you don't want to be like, yeah, I guess. I've grown into my ears a little bit, but I'm telling you, my ears right now, they were this size when I was 10 years old, okay? And so I had this huge ears, and when I was rocking around, you know, elementary school, and you know, kids can be nasty sometimes, they would bend their ears and they'd say to me, fly, Dumbo, fly, you know? Yeah, be sad for me. It's sad. The other thing they would pick on me, and we're going to be talking about a story today about a guy who's blind, and I'm not blind, but I mean, without my contact lenses or my glasses, I can't see anything, okay? So I'm the guy that when I go see the eye doctor, the only reason why I know the biggest letter is an A because I take a peek before I sit down, okay? That's it. In fact, it's illegal for me to drive my car without corrective lenses because I can see nothing. I mean, I have such bad vision. And so growing up, my eyesight was incredibly bad. And I grew up in a home that didn't have, you know, a ton of money. And so my lenses that I got as a 10-year-old, they were so thick. because it would cost so much money to get those lenses compressed. And, you know, my family just have that. And so I used to walk around in between services. People were like, "Were your glasses like this?" And I was like, "That's funny. But yeah, it's exactly like that." Okay. And so they were just so thick, and people would make, you know, so much fun of me, and all the, you know, the four eyes and all the stuff like that. And growing up, I viewed my glasses as a curse, not a blessing. And I thought about this, again, a couple years ago when I went on a trip to Kenya with our team here. And on that particular trip, we had an eye doctor who was part of our church who said, "Hey, I want to go with you. And I want to do an eye clinic at the school where you guys serve there in the slums." And so he brought with him, I mean, thousands of glasses and readers and all this kind of stuff, because we were going to, you know, help kids out. And so we get there, and he does all these exams, and we help a bunch of people out. And here's a conclusion that I came to on that trip, which is wild for me to think about. But education is the main way for these kids to get out of the slums. And some of these kids will not make it out of the slum, and they're going to flunk out of school, not because they're not smart, and not because they're not dedicated to their studies. It's because when they sit in their classroom, they can't see the chalkboard. Glasses for them were not a curse. They were a miracle. That for some reason, somebody halfway around the world would show up at their school and offer them something that potentially would change the direction of their life. It was a miracle for them. And I just wonder sometimes, in the midst of the abundance, do we miss it? I wonder if we could take people that were in the crowd 2,000 years ago following Jesus and bring them into our culture today, if they would go, wow, God is all over this thing. And I wonder how different my life would be if I was in that crowd 2,000 years ago. We have to be careful. John says, be very, very careful. Do not allow the miracle or the lack of miracle that you potentially want to see become more important than the man, because this whole thing is riding on the guy who claimed to be the Son of God. John chapter 9, if you have your Bibles, this is the, depending on how you count the signs, this is the fifth or sixth sign that John is going to kind of work us through. This narrative of a story of a guy who cannot see. And if you've been hanging out with us the last couple weeks, you know John or Jesus is traveling. He's always kind of on the move here. And he's kind of going from the Jerusalem area, the Judea area, to the Galilee area. And he keeps going back and forth, north and south. And when you read through John's gospel, here's kind of the rhythm. You see that Jesus will kind of come into the Jerusalem territory where there the religious leaders are, and it's kind of the more of the hustle and bustle of the city, so to speak. And he will do something or he will say something, and it'll create a stir in the crowd. And the religious leaders, they don't like that. It gets them stirred up. And the reason why they don't like that is because, you know, if things get stirred up, then Rome gets stirred up. And so Jesus will come in, he'll do something, and then he'll get out. He'll go on a trip back to the north. He'll try to get away from the crowds and let things calm down. But you see this rhythm back and forth. And so in John chapter 9, Jesus is back in the vicinity of Jerusalem. And him and his disciples are kind of walking along, you know, the city road one day. And then this story happens. Now, John was there. He was with Jesus, and he was an eyewitness. So he tells us a story. So this is John chapter 9, verse 1. It says this. So as he, talking about Jesus, went along, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who?" It's a very interesting question. "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Because in the first century, the assumption was that there is a cause and effect relationship between sin and suffering. If somebody is suffering, it's because either they sinned or apparently maybe even their parents had sinned. And so in some sense, in that culture, when you saw somebody who was suffering, if you saw a guy who was blind, you were thinking, well, they're just getting what they deserved. This is the consequence of a potential decision they made or their parents made, which is why this story, which is why what the disciples are about to witness is so radical, because Jesus is going to show compassion to somebody who's suffering. meaning he's potentially showing compassion to somebody who deserves what they got. And so they're walking along the road, and Jesus sees a blind man. The disciples go, okay, Jesus, look at this guy. We got a question. Is he blind because of something he did or because of something his parents did? But we know it has to do with sin, right? And then Jesus responds, verse 3, and this is so radical because Jesus creates a whole different category, and he answers the question with neither. This man nor his parents sinned. Guys, you got it wrong. I know you think there's only two categories here. That's not the case. The man is not blind because of what his parents did or he did. Jesus says, and again, brand new idea. This would have wowed them. This would have confused them. He goes, listen, he's blind, but this has happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Brand new category. Jesus says that pain and suffering sometimes can actually have a purpose. And in this, and the purpose in this story, it's a very divine purpose. Jesus goes, no, this has kind of been orchestrated. This is more of a divine thing that's happening right now. And Jesus can say that because Jesus knows that there's a day coming when his own pain and suffering will have a purpose. This blind man will know through this story that his pain and suffering will have a purpose. This isn't all the time, but Jesus would say sometimes your pain and my pain, your suffering and my suffering, sometimes it has a purpose. Jesus creates a brand new category because sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, God chooses to display his power through our pain and our suffering. And you know the power of this when you see people in the midst of pain and suffering, because have you ever seen somebody who's going through some of the toughest days of their life, and their response in the midst of their pain and suffering was so extraordinary, it caused your faith to get bigger. You've seen somebody else's story, but instead of kind of falling back or folding in their faith, they stay strong and they worship God in the midst of it. You've seen this. It stands out to you. It's incredibly impressive. The most extraordinary stories oftentimes involve people that are going through an incredible amount of pain and suffering. The stories that don't stand out to you and me are not the stories of people who live wrinkle-free lives, their kids all get scholarships, and everybody lives to be 99. Nobody's watching that and going, whoa, that's wild. It all worked out for them. Everything they ever wanted, they got. That's not impressive. What's impressive is when somebody's faith, through the circumstances in which they find themselves, begins to be pressed. And what comes out is worship instead of fear. What comes out is worship instead of anxiety. What comes out is worship and not questioning God for why he does or doesn't do what you think he should. Very interesting scenario we have. A blind man who Jesus sees. We're trying to figure out, why is he blind? And the story goes on, verse 4, and as long, this is Jesus talking, he says, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Jesus goes, night is coming and when no one can work. He's using kind of a metaphor here. It's easier to work when it's daytime than in nighttime, especially 2,000 years ago. Then he says, verse 5, while I am in the world, and he said, what he's about to say got him in trouble the chapter before in chapter 8. He goes, while I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. He essentially says to his disciples, hey, the world's a dark place, but I'm here and I'm light. And so here's an opportunity for my light to shine in the midst of this man's darkness. Physically speaking, definitely, because this man is living in darkness, but also spiritually. Verse 6, and then this story gets a little wild. I love it. He says, after saying this, this is Jesus, he spit on the ground. I wish I was there. I'm a big baseball guy. There's a lot of spitting on the ground. You didn't know this, but a lot of baseball players spit as an act of worship for Jesus. You didn't know that. Why do they spit so much? They're just following their rabbi. That's it. He spit on the ground. This is one of those, you know, I love the Gospels and I love working through the stories of John because I go, I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have been there. I don't think this is a normal practice. I mean, he's just talking to this guy and then he's, Jesus is like, look, I'm the light of the world. And then he just hawks a loogie right into the dirt. Okay? He spits on the ground and look what he starts doing. He made some mud with his saliva. I mean, John wants you to know, he spit in the ground. And he put it on the man's eyes. So the question would be, did the man know that it was Jesus' spit? Okay, we don't know. John doesn't tell us. I will say this. I don't think he knew. You know, I think maybe he got a little water bottle or something. That's what this guy's thinking. He doesn't know because he can't see. Okay? But Jesus, he spits it to the ground. He makes mud. And then this is all he gives the guy. Verse 7, he says, go. Go wash in the pool of Siloam. The word means sent. It's very interesting. So this blind man literally has an interaction with Jesus and he walks by faith and not by sight. He's not healed yet. He's still blind. If what we have recorded that John gives us was the fullness of the discussion, it was even very brief. All this man knows is that somebody created mud in the ground and put it on his eyes and said, you should go wash your eyes. And so the man went, why wouldn't he? Of course he's going to go try it. And washed, then he went home because he could see. Best day of his life. Verse 8, he gets to his community where he grew up. Verse 8, and it says his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging and asked, this guy was, you know, his life was just begging on the streets, asked, isn't this the same man he used to sit and beg? And some claimed that he was, and others said, no, he only looks like him. But then he kept saying, it's me. It's a huge conversation. He gets home. It's not quite the celebration potentially he was hoping for because some people are going, that can't be him. Some people are going, it kind of looks like him. Yeah, but this guy can see. The guy we know can't see. And he's going, no, come on. It's me. And so they asked a question that we would have asked. Verse 10, they go, well, how then were your eyes opened? If it's really you, because we know you, and you were blind, but now you can see. So how did that happen? And look at his response, verse 11. And he replied, very simply, the man they call Jesus made some mud. And again, I don't think he knows how he made it, okay? But the man they call Jesus made some mud, and he put it on my eyes. It's very simple. And he told me to go to Siloam and wash, and so I went and washed, and then I could see. To which they respond in verse 12, where is this man? To which I hope he said, I didn't see him. I was still blind, okay? Where did he go? I don't know. Listen to the story. He told me to go to wash, and I went and washed, and then I could see, and he was gone. I couldn't even tell you what he looks like. He could be here right now. I didn't see him. How do you see? There is a guy who claimed to be Jesus. I heard his name. He made mud. He put it in my eyes and I washed. It's an unbelievable story, right? If we were there, it'd be difficult for us to believe it too. A lot of questions. Verse 13. And then, so here's what would happen. And that day, this blind man, because his blindness was associated or connected with his sin, meaning that he was unclean. So spiritually speaking, he was not allowed near the temple or the synagogue. He was an outcast physically and spiritually. But now all of a sudden, he's been healed. He can see, meaning that potentially, because if his blindness is connected to his sin has been taken care of. And so what would happen in their culture, they would bring this used to be sick person to the religious leaders and go, can you restore him now? Something has changed. Can we welcome this man back into to our church, essentially, to our temple, to our synagogue? Can he worship with us? He used to be unclean, but now he has got to be clean. So they're going to bring him now to the Pharisees to be restored spiritually. So they brought him to the Pharisees, the man who had been blind, verse 14. Now we get a little bit more detail from John. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Oh, here we go. Jesus, you know, breaking the rules, doing things he shouldn't do. Verse 15, therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received sight. They're trying to catch Jesus, and the man, I don't think, probably gets it in the moment, but here's what he says. Tells him the same story. I know this guy, this is Jesus. Look what he says. He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and now I see. And now the Pharisees, that aren't really big fans of Jesus anyways, they've asked the question, they set the trap, because in their eyes and in the way that they read the Torah and their oral version of the Torah, it would have been essentially almost illegal for Jesus to do what he did, because on the Sabbath, this day that you would set apart and you wouldn't work, you could not mix. It was that specific. These Pharisees, they're so smart, and they're like, well, how did he heal it? And the guy's like, he mixed. And they're like, thank you for saying that. You know, just give it to me. You know, how'd he do it? You know, how'd he do it? And someone's like, he hawked a loogie and he mixed it. And they're like, great. Yeah. So he was doing something he was not allowed to do. It would have been illegal for Jesus. This is very interesting. In the oral kind of version of the Torah that was kind of being passed down, you could not heal somebody unless it was to save their life. Blindness wasn't kind of a he's going to die today kind of vibe. And so, again, the Pharisees are writing this down going, we got him. He's doing things he shouldn't do. Meaning, and this is what we're going to see in a second, he too is also a sinner. We have the evidence we need to cast him out too. Verse 16, and so some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God. He can't be from God. He just sinned, for he does not keep the Sabbath. And then other people go, well, how can a sinner perform such signs? Okay, well, if he's not from God, then how's he healing blind people? This doesn't really make any sense. Now, technically, here's what I would tell you. Jesus was not breaking the Sabbath. He was just breaking their version of the Sabbath. They kind of were picking and choosing and leveraging things that kind of were written in the law that they were kind of able to control and leverage in the spirituality of other people. Verse 17, then they turned again to the blind man. They go, well, what do you got to say about him, you know? You were there. It was your eyes open. And the man replied very simply, he's got to be a prophet, right? He did the miraculous. And his answer, it didn't please them. Verse 18, they still did not, and look at the word that John uses there, they did not what? Believe. This is all about believing. It's a story about believing. John goes, look, they still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they go get his mom and dad. They go, hey, get your parents to show up here because we got some questions for them too. Verse 19, parents show up and they say to them, is this your son? Is this the one that you say was blind, born blind? How is it now that he can see? And they respond, verse 20, well, we know he is our son. Like, mom's like, I was there. I saw him born, and yes, he was blind. That's true. Verse 21, but how he can see now? Or who opened his eyes? We don't know. Ask him. They kind of pass the buck. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself. Now, John tells us in the verses after this that his parents, they kind of knew what was going on. This was a very political conversation. And they know if they didn't answer the way that these Pharisees wanted them to answer, that they were going to get thrown out of the temple. So they're covering their back. They kind of throw their son to the wolves a little bit. And they go, hey, that's between you and him. We don't want to be involved in that because we kind of like what we got going on. And the second time, verse 24, they summoned the man who had been blind. And they say to him, you should give glory to God by telling the truth. We know this man is a sinner. We know he's doing things he shouldn't be doing. So tell the truth. And he replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. But gents, let me sum it up for you. One thing I do know. I was blind. And now I see. Yeah, well, what about? I don't know. Who is he? I don't know. I don't know. But I woke up this morning and I couldn't see. And after I met this rabbi, I could see. Did he sin? I don't know. Was he a prophet? I think so. I was blind, and now I see. I think it's important for us, especially followers of Jesus. I love that this blind man in John chapter 9 gives us a phrase that all of us have in common. When people begin to press in your faith and ask you, why do you believe? What about this? And what about this? And what about this thing that Jesus said, which doesn't make a lot of sense? What about this Old Testament story? There's no way that you really believe that. Why would you be a Christian? Why would you be a person of faith? And a blind man in John chapter 9 says, I could tell you why. Spiritually speaking, there was a day that all of us have in common. We did not know God. We were blind. And somewhere along the way, the light of the world intervened and you could see. You don't know the answers to all the questions, and neither did this guy. And sometimes I feel like, as Christians, we feel like we need to know everything. And the only thing you need to know is your story. I was blind. And I ran into a guy. And now I see. I was blind. And now I see. Story continues, and these guys go back and forth, and this guy, this blind guy who can now see, gets a little kind of edgier in his responses, and eventually gets to the end of the conversation, verse 34, and it says this: to this they replied to this guy, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. And I've read this story many a times. And this week, as I'm reading this story, and I read those five words, and they threw him out. Ah. What was supposed to be the best day of this guy's life. A guy who had been born blind. A guy who's been labeled an outcast. A guy who has spent his whole life begging for money and food all day, every day. Who on this day, through divine intervention, bumps into a rabbi who's walking by him and sees him. Who then makes some mud and puts it on his face and tells him to go wash. And when he does, he can see. And he must run home with excitement. And instead of a celebration, he's questioned. Then he's brought to the religious leaders where he is questioned some more, where he essentially is put on trial as a kind of political figure to fall into their agenda. But he tells the truth. His parents don't really get his back because they're nervous that what's about to happen to him is going to happen to them. And these religious leaders don't like what he says, and so they throw him out. To which I wonder, this guy who was blind now can see, but I also wonder if he's feeling like his life, even meeting and bumping into a rabbi that changed his life, but his life hasn't gotten any better. I wonder if he's just as alone now than he was that morning. Some of us feel like that sometimes. We've engaged with Jesus, and yet still not going the way that we think it should. And we say things like this. I have said this in the back porch of my house growing up at 12 years old when my father passed away. And I quote, if this is what it's like to be a Christian, I'm better off on my own. I just wonder what his reaction was. Walking out of that meeting with the religious leaders, knowing that he was still an outcast and he was still considered unclean and he was not going to be welcome to worship with his parents in the synagogue. Church, God help us God help us that we never become a place where we allow our self-righteousness to boil up in the context of our faith, that we keep people out. If you're a believer this morning, you started where everybody starts. You were blind. Don't you forget it. And Jesus allowed you to see. Whew. Can't worship here, sorry. Too messy, too dirty, not simple enough. No thank you. Now, here's what I love about Jesus. Because the story continues, verse 35. I love this. These next two words, I feel this immense, just, oh, this weightiness. Ah, they could have got this right. The religious leaders could have did the right thing. They didn't do the right thing because they had their own agenda and they're just worried about keeping people out and keeping the right people in. And then, the, you know, then you get down to verse 35, two words here. Then Jesus heard. Love that. He heard. There was a buzz going on in the city. There's this story going on about this blind guy who could see, and he met with the religious leaders and they kicked him out. But Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And I just wonder what that's like. Like, he goes and finds the guy and he's like, "What's up, dude?" You know what I mean? That guy still doesn't know who he is. And he's like, "Hey, you got kicked out, huh?" And he's like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, they're not a fan of me either." So Jesus hears, he goes and finds the guy, and then right out the gate, here's the question for the guy. John goes, come on, this is the most important thing. Jesus is more important than the sign. This is a bigger story than just a blind guy who can see. Jesus finds him and he says, "Do you believe in the Son of Man? I heard they were asking you questions about this guy who claimed to be, you know, the Son of God and Jesus, but do you believe?" Now notice this, he still doesn't believe in this moment because signs don't save you, Jesus does. He still doesn't believe, verse 36, the guy responds, "Well, who is he, sir? Never seen him. Tell me so that I may believe in him." Verse 37, Jesus says, "You have now seen him." Haha, you know? "You've seen him now. In fact, he is the one speaking to you. Look, you've been blind physically, but now you have the opportunity to be unblind spiritually." Verse 38, and then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Phew. I believe now. I believe. If you're in the room and you're hanging out with us today, and you feel like you don't belong, you might even have a story. And some Christian somewhere along the way or some church along the way that has communicated to you or treated you in the way that says you don't belong here. You don't measure up. You don't talk the right way. You don't look the right way. You don't act the right way. If you have a conversation with Jesus, he hears you. He hears you. And the one who you need to be most concerned for and with is the one that can light up your life. You got a blind guy who now can see. He was blind physically and spiritually. And Jesus, because of who Jesus is, takes care of both. Both. He sees. He sees. Physically and spiritually. Friends, it's a reminder for us who have yet to believe of our origin story. I love that we have this phrase, "I was blind, but now I see." It's very interesting. I'm thinking about a song this week that was written in 1772. By a guy named John Newton, who also thought this phrase was a big phrase. "I was blind, but now I see." It's a foundational phrase for those of us who are Christians. And I love that we get it from a blind guy in John chapter 9. We don't even get this guy's name, but he offers us a profound simplicity to the gospel. "Excuse me, sir, why do you believe?" "I was blind. And now I see." No self-righteousness. No, this is what I did. I was blind. I was helpless. I was a beggar. And a rabbi saw me. And if you're a Christian in the room this morning, if that's not your story, then you don't have the right version of Christianity. You were blind. I was blind. And we bumped into Jesus, and now we see. So here's what I want to do. I want to close our service today. I'll pray in just a moment, but I want to do something that's a little risky, okay? I get it. And it might be weird. If it's weird, just walk out and go, that was weird, and we'll get over it, okay? Come back next week, and you can just be like, hey, I hope we don't do that again. In NYWOD campus, I get it, and people at your house watching, you know, today, I totally get it, because singing in your house is weird, or because I'm not in the NYWOD campus, it could be weird. I totally get it, okay? But here's what I'd like to do, especially for those of us who have been around faith for a while, to remind ourselves. I love what Sean said last week. Sometimes we need to sing. We need to utter words that are kind of in our hearts and our mind. It's good for us to hear these words. And so I want to close our service today by hearing some words. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sing, and I'm not a singer, okay? I'm going to sing the first verse of Amazing Grace. That in 1772, John Newton must have read John 9 and said, wow. That's it. That's my story and your story. That I was blind and now I see, which Amazing Grace has become, you know, one of the most famous songs of faith and the history, you know, of the world. So I'm going to sing it. And here's what I hope. I hope you don't leave me out to dry. Okay? I hope for those of you who know the words, you'll sing with me. And as we sing together, we just don't sing for the sake of singing, but we sing to remind our souls. Oh, yeah, that's right. I almost forgot. That's right. Whew, I almost forgot in my judgment and my self-righteousness, but that's right. That's right. That's right. I was blind, but now I see. Okay, are you ready? Say yes a little bit louder, okay? Make me, okay. I'm up here sweating, and you guys are like, yeah, do it, do it. We're on the same team. If it's weird, it's weird for all of us, okay? So, all right, you ready? All right, here we go. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Pray with me, Father, this morning. That's our prayer. It's our reminder. As followers of you, thank you. Thank you that there was a day you saw us. You saw us. And you talked with us. And you even gave us signs of who you were to demonstrate your power and authority. The biggest of all that's coming on Easter. That we may hear the words of John this morning from a story of a blind man who knew nothing about spirituality. Barely knew anything about you except you were a guy who claimed to be the Son of God who had time in his day and showed compassion to somebody that the world had pushed aside. In the context of our spirituality, that's our story. Blind people who met somebody who changed our life forever. And that is the story. That is the story that we lead with in our community, with our neighbors, with our friends, with our coworkers, with our families. Why do we believe? Because spiritually speaking, there was a day we were blind. And now we see. We thank you for Jesus. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.